Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends. Happy to have you here with us as always. Got a really good show coming up for you here today. We bring our regular guests and unpaid beer correspondents, Sal Mortellaro and Matt Horney, back as we do about once a quarter or so to talk beers. And we have a bit of a conversation about the state of the craft beer industry. We throw some numbers at you a little bit and just talk about kind of, you know, how things are going in the craft beer industry. And now it's like in many industries, it's been a real rough go due to the pandemic. But we talk about some other things and we sip on some interesting beers and such as we do. We're over at Old Rail Brewing Company in Old Mandeville. Matt, who is the brewmaster there, was gracious enough to host us. And yeah, drank some beers off the taps. They were actually closed, so we got to sit at the bar. It was pretty fun. Had a good time and always informative when Matt and Sal are around talking about brews. Programming note for you, friends. Next week's show is going to be a pretty interesting one. We chat with our friends, the Bourbon Betties, who are the Bourbon Betties. They do a podcast on the ABV Network, which is a very bourbon whiskey-driven podcast network. And basically, it's three of them, and they do, as I just said, a regular podcast there, and it's called The Bourbon Betties. All three, of course, are women. One of them is my friend, Barbara Hirsch, who is a fellow board member with me on with the charity, Kids Can NOLA, that puts on New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and we've talked about that before. So Barbara's one. And then also Courtney Cantrell and Katie Garrett. Katie is the owner of the Old Hickory Whiskey Bar, which is in Pensacola, and they weathered the storm okay, if you're concerned. We all were. And Courtney Cantrell, who I just mentioned, works for Katie, but she used to work here in New Orleans at Barrel Proof, among other places. So it was good to see Courtney again, and a lot of fun. So we're going to talk about bourbon. We're going to talk about a bit ideas of diversity and female representation in the world of bourbon and whiskey. They turned me on to a couple of their traditions that they do when they do their show. So we do some of that. Some of that you'll have to hear on the podcast. But a really fun show next week, friends, with the Bourbon Betties. Be sure to check that one out. Little programming note here for you. If you're listening to the podcast, which most of you do, and that's what I encourage you to do, go to noladrinks.com. We got a little out of sorts, and things are a little bit delayed with the podcasts and the order in which I aired them. And basically, we were expecting, of course, fortunately, which we did not get, we're just referencing this in Pensacola, direct effects from Hurricane Sally, and the station changed what it was doing, the radio station, if you're listening here on WGSO. And then we kind of had to delay things and move some things around. And I wanted to get the podcast out for Tales of the Cocktail, which if you're listening on the radio is happening as we speak online. Do go check it out. Fun show. We did the preview show. So we kind of flipped order around a little bit, but we're going to be kind of trying to get caught up here on getting the podcast out. So don't worry. We got one coming up pretty quick with Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka and Animal Welfare and some other interesting things. So be sure to stay tuned for that one. Okay. Bear with me. It'll all get caught up and be in the right order here pretty quick. If you're listening on the radio, again, the show coming up here is on beer. And if you're listening to the podcast, the show coming up is on beer. That makes sense, right? Anyway, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to be back at Old Rail Brewing Company talking with Matt and Sal about brews. Come on back.
Down on the phone, down yonder, where I was born. Down yonder on the farm, raise that chicken and raise that corn. Down yonder, down on the farm. Down yonder, me, Sue, and John. We go ballin' with Uncle John. Way down yonder on the farm, raise that chicken and raise them corn. Down yonder, down on the farm.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. As always, yep, we're doing, I think, what, three new shows in a row after taking our break. Maybe four, three. I'm going to go three. Happy to have you with us, and happy to be back after our summer break. And as promised last week, we are back with our unpaid beer correspondents, Matt and Sal. Matt Horney, brewmaster and a certified beer judge. brewmaster here at Old Rail Brewing Company. Matt, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Good to be here.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Good to see you. I'm a little disturbed. You don't have a beard.
Yeah. I don't even remember how long ago that thing went.
It was a while ago. Uh-huh. And then did you kind of like shave it off and you kind of brought it back briefly and then took it off again, or am I making that up?
Well, I did last summer. I took it off and then brought it back. And this time it's been gone for probably 3 months.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 months. Okay.
Something like that. I kind of time warped through COVID right there and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
Okay. Right. And Sal Mortellaro, also certified beer judge, grandmaster beer judge here at BJCP.
Yes, sir.
Which stands for the Beer Judging Certification Program. By the way, we'll get into that too, as we always do. And you have short hair, Sal.
I now have short hair. It was short hair, long hair, now back to short hair.
Well, when we say long hair,
that's a relative term for me.
Yeah, it was. And when we taped the show with you guys, I want to say March, maybe April. On our front porch. Go check it out. It was a lot of fun. That was kind of right in the heart of COVID things. And I described it like it was your Rubber Soul phase, man. You look like the cover of the Beatles' Rubber Soul album.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't go long hair. You weren't hippie. You were kind of like 1965.
That was hippie for me.
That was pretty hippie for you. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
It was a little confusing, you know, when you saw him. That's Sal.
Yeah, when he got out of the car, I'm like, you know, who's this like 1965 guy, Rubber Soul, Beatles, Paul McCartney rolling up in my driveway?
Matt's been known to come up to Old Rail and trick the bar staff, take the beard off and come up and order a beer and they don't have a clue.
Oh, doing the secret chopper thing.
Yeah, the secret chopper, yes.
I like that. And the term I was looking for was mod. It was kind of like you're going through your mod phase there. So so it's good to see. But now you're back doing some like Army Reserve stuff aside from your beer judging. So
yes.
do they frown upon the mod look?
Generally, yes. They like the hair a little shorter.
Okay.
So hence I had to shave off all of my hair. But it's grown out over the last 2 months since that went down. So it's nice to have some hair back.
So that's actually grown out, which is
after two months.
That's impressive.
Yes.
So are you due another cutback?
I am. Yeah, I got to get another. I'm going to get another haircut so I can try to, you know, balance it out a little bit, get back where it was.
Okay, that's good.
Feels weird. I feel like a puffball.
Yeah, people will have to go look at the social media posts and whatnot because when we're talking about it, again, it's all relative. Short versus when you say that's 2 months worth of growth, man. I mean, I would look like a hippie after 2 months.
I had great hair, but now it's gone. All that hard work's gone.
Oh, well. All that hard work is gone. You know, you'll find it just as a side note before we get into our real topic of beer discussion here is that there is a time when you can cut it back and cut it back and it gets rid of the gray and then that stops working. It does stop working. Trust me, I'm there.
I think that's pretty much why I shaved the beard off. I think it was getting a little too gray.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys, what we're talking about here today, obviously, as we do with you guys about once a quarter, we pop on and we talk about beer and we talk about, you know, styles and we talk about components of beer like barley or malt. And kind of what we're going to talk about today, we'll talk about some of the beers that we're sipping on, of course, as we always do. But what we're talking about today is sort of the state of the craft beer industry. And, you know, we always don't want to talk about COVID all the time, but it's an interesting year. And here we are in September of 2020. And I think an interesting thing that's happened is that we start to see some numbers come out. And I will tell people that we've done some research. Last time we kind of talked about some of this stuff anecdotally, just sort of what we were observing in April. And now we're starting to see some numbers. Now, granted, I think the numbers are skewed in a lot of ways. And we really probably won't know more until next year. But we are starting to see some midway metrics. And the one thing I'll say is the TTB here, which collects a lot of data in the United States anyway, there was a moratorium because of COVID on collecting data. So we're starting to actually just now see March and April numbers roll out. And, you know, it's kind of frightening. The beginning of the year was actually looking pretty good. And I'll throw it to you guys in just a second. But I think we were seeing craft beers in particular. You know, craft beers enjoyed double-digit growth for a number of years. And then in the past couple years, we've seen craft beers kind of normalize like a regular industry, right, where substantial but single digit growth, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9%, whatever it may be. And we saw that maybe at the beginning of the first year, still healthy growth in craft beers. And then halfway through March, we see things kind of tank a little bit. And some of the estimates that came out from the Brewers Association is that best guesses, at least in the first half of the year, craft beers were down 10% ish overall. What are your reactions to that?
The 10% thing, even pre-COVID, I guess we saw some little bit of declines competing with seltzers and stuff like that, kind of coming from last year in 2019.
And slowing the growth, right?
Slowing the growth, yeah. And I think overall there was a larger competition with craft cocktails. The spirit industry was making a resurgence because of all the local spirit manufacturers, distillers.
So like an uptick in local craft distilleries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that started impacting it. The 10%, I was kind of surprised by that number, but I think it kind of makes sense. With the competition was getting fierce, there's, you know, some turbulence in the industry and some markets across the country getting more competitive.
Well, so. And do you think, Matt, too, that we're seeing that 10% is probably buoyed up by the fact that the first 2.5 months out of the year weren't so bad?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it depends on where the number, you know, we were talking about it earlier. We were looking at these numbers and, you know, that 10% was the first 2 months of 2020.
So the Brewers Association, and I'll give credit where credit is due. So the economist for the Brewers Association, Bart Watson, pretty talented guy, was talking about his best guess estimate. And you can go look at these articles. We don't have to split hairs here. His best guess estimate was down 10% in the first half of 2020.
The first half, yeah.
So that includes the first 2.5 pre-COVID months.
And then
hard COVID bucks.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, you know, I think that makes sense. And we were talking about some of the other stuff, some of these other numbers and the percentage of breweries that were facing, you know, 100% decline in sales, you know, a period almost shut down. And that, you know, that was 15%. And then we were looking at 20%. We're at like 90% drop in sales.
Mm-hmm.
And that was early April. So if that plays into some of those numbers, you know. Yeah,
sort of the worst is yet to come potentially. When I think when we look at these numbers, is that a fair thing to say?
I think early on,
meaning as we start to see April, May,
yeah,
June,
it was the, you know, the darkest times were kind of occurring in that period.
Right.
And now that it's kind of sorted out and people have figured out how to handle it and how to let people into the spaces and accommodate the customers and. Some of that's kind of shook out, and we've kind of seen that with some of the numbers that we were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was some of the fluctuations and, you know, some of the spikes, but then some of the downturns a little bit again. And you can see that, I think, even probably if you correlate some of this information with the COVID numbers, maybe there's when we see spikes in the COVID numbers across the country, you know, what happens with the sales of products and things like that too. So
yeah, it was really interesting to look at some of those numbers, Matt, because we were looking at some things where right when the onset of shutdowns in COVID in March in particular, I think there was a massive run on alcohol. So people were, you know, along with toilet paper, they were buying a bunch of booze. And then we saw that slow down and actually trough quite a bit.
Yep.
But Sal, let me ask you this, because what, you know, we've seen this dip in numbers. And there's a discerning situation here, I think, a little bit, too, because a lot of people will say that we see off-premise, meaning when you buy something at a grocery store or bottle shop, whatever, versus on-premise, meaning when you buy something in a bar or in a restaurant. A lot of people say, well, you know, the on-premise, yeah, and we're not talking about the fortunes of the on-premise people, but those numbers have gone down, the off-premise has gone up, and they've not been so bad, you know, meaning that one is kind of taken away or wiped out the other. But when we kind of look maybe a little closer, or in your take on this, are we seeing, you know, with craft beers, are people just buying more Budweiser, or are people buying craft beer still?
So, you know, let me actually piggyback off of a point that Matt made a little bit earlier that y'all were talking about a second ago. Despite all this COVID stuff, despite all the negativity going on, I'll throw out a shout out to these guys. Louisiana's newest brewery actually opened up this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Cypress Coast out of Baton Rouge on Government Street. So, you know, we are starting to see things normalize to a certain extent. Things are still weird. Things are still bizarre. But, you know, we are still having breweries open. God bless them for, you know, doing it now. They're definitely brave and bold. But, you know, they had a great opening weekend. So Budweiser versus craft beer, I really think that it depends on the client. There is this huge push in the craft beer community to support your local craft brewery, to support craft brewery in general. Everybody knows that, despite what I just said a few seconds ago, the big grand scheme of things, these times definitely do suck. you see a lot of these breweries starting to innovate and change in ways that you've never seen them before, such as basically pickup orders, online orders, you know, come swing by, we'll bring it out to you. You definitely do see a lot of these bottle shops, 504 Craft Reserve, you know, still slinging beers out.
Bottle shop.
Bottle shops in general still slinging beer out. So craft beer is still cheap. And it's weird times, too, in that, you know, a lot of people are still out of work and bang for the buck. Yeah, sure, sometimes Miller High Life, the champagne of beers is a little cheaper. But we really do see a good push within the craft beer community to kind of support our own folks that we love.
Okay, and so that's important. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're seeing in the craft spirits industry is that, and we've talked about that on this show a little bit, and we kind of know this anecdotally and also data-driven-wise, is that craft spirits are struggling greatly because if you're not going to go drop $60 on a bottle that you don't know what it is. And so, you know, this craft beautiful whiskey out of Texas or something like that, if you don't taste it, you're not going to go in the store and buy it. You're going to buy a bottle of Jack because you know what that is, and it costs $15, $18, whatever that does, whatever that costs. And, you know, we rely on, craft spirits world, we rely on bartenders and tastings and other things that have been largely taken away from us to introduce us to new things. Uh-huh. Now, I mean, the beer community, I think, is a little bit different, because I think you were just touching on this, Sal, is that the price point, I mean, the risk of the price point's a little less.
Sure. You know, an expensive beer, an expensive four-pack is $20
right,
or so. And I mean, that's a valid point. Granted, outside of these bottle shops, which are retail establishments, they are allowed to be open. They're basically liquor stores. To go to a tap room, except for maybe relatively recently, to go to a tap room or to go to the brewery itself, or a bar, a beer-centric bar, to be guided and introduced to these certain things, you're definitely lacking that in this post-COVID world that we live mm-hmm. in, and therefore people aren't as explorative, I would seem to say. They're not out there trying new things. Mm-hmm. So it is an uphill battle in that sense. Mm-hmm. But you're right, the price point on beer, $20 for $20 to $24 for an expensive four-pack of a double dry hop, whatever, versus $60, $80, $100
bottle of cachaça or mezcal.
Correct.
Right. What do you think, Matt? We got about 2 minutes before we take a break.
Yeah, I think I don't really kind of get too much in the mix of that kind of stuff as far as the spirits and stuff go. So I can't really speak to that too much.
Sure.
Except for gin, but talk about that a little later.
Yeah, sure.
But. But yeah, I do want to mention though, because I was looking through some stuff here as you guys were talking, and one of the things we had mentioned earlier was just I'll make this quick, but the amount of closures that occurred in the first half of the year, you know, going back to that drop in 10% with 118 closures in breweries,
yeah,
which
112, I think.
You think that would be a lot worse than it mm-hmm. was, you know, maybe, and I think that was kind of an interesting number to take a look at.
I think that number too, if I remember correctly, Matt, from reading, was that number was pretty commensurate with last year,
mm-hmm.
With the number of closures. Mm-hmm. And so it's not the net loss hasn't been as huge, but we still haven't seen the repercussions of people still have liquid for 4 or 5, 6 months to stay open or had a business plan maybe to open and mm-hmm. then still open in September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said earlier, you know, some of these numbers, they don't have all the numbers yet, so some of those could change a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to, as we see more of that rollout, what we're going to do, friends, here, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more, not trying to be too doomy and gloomy, but we are talking about the state of the craft beer industry here after the first half of the year in 2020 in our COVID environment. Take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Come on back. Everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in a podcast land, wherever you may be. Happy to have you here listening in. Hey, we're at Old Rail Brewing Company, friends, in Old Mandeville, and thanks to them for hosting us. Matt Horney is the brewmaster here. He joins us as he always does when we do our quarterly-ish beer show, along with Sal Mortellaro, who, and Sal just hangs out here a lot. So, I mean, Matt actually works here, and Sal's just – it was easy. I scheduled this with Matt, Sal, and then you were here, even though it's actually Wednesday and they're closed.
Yes, I'm here even when they're closed.
And it's good to see you.
It's good to be seen.
As always. And my two good friends here, Matt and Sal, as we always do, talking beer. And yeah, we're kind of bringing you a doomy and gloomy show. We'll have a lot more. You guys, we'll regroup on this after the first of the year when we have some firmer numbers. We're starting to see, as I mentioned in the previous segment, that the TTB was not collecting numbers. So we're starting to see like just March and April roll out now. So it's a little difficult to unpack craft from mass-produced beer, large producers. But what are the striking numbers that we saw? So this came out in recent days that March, that kegs were down 48% over March of 2019. And then what we're seeing in April, this is based on estimates, so these numbers could change. But still, shockingly, then going from 48%, as I just said, to 86.3% down in April. And, I mean, that's clearly shutdown of on-premise. And then we see cases are actually only down 5.8%, which is maybe where people kind of get in that idea that, well, off-premise has erased on-premise. Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. And then tavern sales, which I believe are just simply, you know, beer sales in a place of drinking, is down 35.4% in April. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to see these numbers come out where we're seeing the hard hit from COVID coming around. So people are still buying. As we see, only 5.8% down. It's a big number in the overall world of beer. Just to give you an example, almost 7.4 million cases of beer in 2019, down to almost 6.95-ish cases of beer in 2020 in April. So that's a big number for the industry, but that's not nearly as shocking as kegs being down 86.3%.
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing with some of the keg sales or kegs being down is the actual volume that's probably being produced after that. So some of these breweries probably made the choice to stop production on some of these beers. You know, these kegs aren't going out the door anymore. Some breweries were actually laying off people. So
especially the small guys, right?
Yeah. And there's some larger ones. Production staff was being let go, you know, because if you're just churning out hundreds of thousands of barrels a year and now you're cut down to a small amount.
On the keg side. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. So with some of the scenarios that were playing out in this, with the uncertain, the unknowns, I know in New Orleans, you know, with some of the bars there, they were just like, we can't get this beer. We can't stock it. We can't find it. Nobody, you know, distributors don't have it. So some of the breweries just stopped making it. And then it took a while, you know, for some of those beers to get reproduced again to get them back in. And, you know, making beers is kind of a long process. So it takes time to build it all back up.
So Matt, what are you saying? Like that when we went end of March, right? Mm-hmm. And then April and such, like this sort of hard shutdown where everybody literally shuttered. So then you got to come back in and you got to ramp it back up and start production back again.
And we got caught in up on that in a smaller scale and like a mini scale. And, you know, we were like, well, let's just stop making everything. We don't know what's happening. We're doing curbside sales here. And tanks were just kind of sitting empty. We're just letting the volumes get low because we didn't know what the governor's announcement was going to be in June and whether or not we would even be open. So we didn't want to fill every fermenter we had with fresh beer and not even know if it was going to be able to be sold. But then when it came time to go, you know, we have to reproduce get these beers back in stock, and then we're selling out of stuff now because everybody's coming back buying stuff. We got a crowler machine. Things started changing. And
tell people what a crowler machine is.
Oh, well, the crowler machine. Well, you can do pretty much any size. You can do 12-ounce cans, 8-ounce cans,
so
whatever.
Not a bottle. You can actually can for
yeah,
to go.
Yeah, right at the bar. Mm-hmm.
For short term.
Yeah. So we went with 24-ounce cans. 32-ounce were... And this was another thing, the aluminum industry, there was a shortage of cans. Nobody could find cans anywhere. You know, there's the things that get into issues with imports coming from international, you know, things like that. It's like, you know, these products just aren't available.
Parts and materials and...
Yeah, aluminum. So then we elected, we couldn't find 32-ounce cans, but we kind of were leaning towards something a little smaller anyways. We wanted something easier to carry around, something a little bit more sessionable in size instead of 32. So we went 24. Those were available, and that's been a good success for us. And, you know, that's a positive that's come out of it. some of the other things, though, was, you know, some of our malt suppliers, I've gone to order stuff for some of our usual beers that we brew, and we go through some circumstances where some of those malts aren't available. And it might just be 2 weeks, it might be 3 weeks, but it kind of throws off the production schedule a little bit and skews things.
And that's a really good point. And Sal, I think as we were talking about spirits, and we touched on wine briefly in the previous segment, as Matt's saying too, beer, I mean, certainly there are age-worthy beers out there and things that you age either in the brewery or age, you know, in the cellar yourself. But we are talking about something that, by and large, the vast majority is meant to be drunk fresh.
Absolutely.
So this interruption in the supply chain and this interruption in just customer purchasing is a huge hiccup in all of this.
Those ripples are felt pretty quick. As Matt pointed out, hey, we don't know what's going to happen with this. We're not going to make a batch of beer to where we may not be open tomorrow for months, you know, if not ever again. Mm-hmm. And it's really one of those things where fresh is best. And actually, I commented on something earlier to where there was a topic at the craft brewers convention a few years ago, and basically fresh is best. It's okay to run out of stuff because you want to have the freshest drink possible, and people are buying your stuff now. Granted, that's a little bit different with the whole COVID situation, but yes, for the vast majority of beer styles, you gotta pretty much drink them now, outside of your higher alcohol beers or bacteria based beers. Mm-hmm.
But that's a
small
fraction of what we're talking
about. Right? That's if even 15% of beer styles out there. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. And I think that touches on a lot of this as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think closures are closures and people can't buy, but then the disruption in the production aspect of this and the supply chain just in general is also significant in beer and probably differs to a degree from spirits. And we know spirits, distilleries shut down, winery shut down for the same period of time, but you know, refiring the still, even if you're going to age your bourbon for 10 years, if you took 3 weeks out to shut down the still, you can fire the still back up.
And it was, I started asking myself the questions of like, do we find a way just to get more barrel aged beer going just to keep something happening here that we could utilize later on? We didn't get to that point, but I had to start asking those questions of what can we actually make now that we could use later. So
and have something when people enter. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you guys, we got about a minute and a half before we take a break. And I would be remiss, very quickly, Matt, tell us about this gin and tonic.
The gin and tonic Goza, we hadn't brewed this for 2 years.
We're
last
drinking it right now. That's why I bring it up.
So that is, a Goza style beer. Gozas are salty, usually coriander, but we kind of drop that just because we flavor it. And salty, sour, and decided to take the gin and tonic route probably about 6 years ago now, something like that. And so we brought this one back, and it's probably one of my favorites, probably one of my most favorites out of the unique beers that we do.
It's delicious. Sal, we get like 15 seconds. What do you think of this beer?
I love it. If I'm not drinking beer, more than likely I'm drinking a gin and tonic. The quinine in here is great. It's bitter. You get a little bit of the lime in there. The tartness is good. I'm with Matt on this. It's probably one of my most favorite beers they do. It's super fun. It's different. It's one of those beers that really changes your perspective about what beer can be or what beer is. And fun to drink, man.
Nice citrus note, like you said, and good porch pounder, but it's not cloyingly sweet. You get a kind of sweet and sour kind of thing going on. It's
absolutely
delicious. Well, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the craft beer industry. Of course, Sal and Matt are going to stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks on our podcast only segment. Ooh, and then we've got a Belgian ale in our glass that we're going to talk about as well, friends. Come on, Matt.
Well, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on a corner with the bucket in my hand. I'm just looking for a woman that ain't got no man. My bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Yes, I went up on a mountain. I looked down on the sea. I seen.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening to Old Drink Show, friends. Always happy to have you here. Thanks to our friends at Old Rail Brewing Company here in Old Manville, chatting about beers with Matt and Sal, as we do on a fairly regular basis. And, yeah, we'll talk about doom and gloom just just a touch more here, you guys. Well, actually, no, we're gonna kind of flip the script on this a little bit and talk about in the second half of 2020. So we've been quoting a lot of numbers, you guys, from the Brewers Association and kind of the best latest numbers that we have. And I do want to caution, a lot of what we're talking about here is these are estimates. We don't have all the complete numbers. COVID disrupted a lot as far as just even reporting and mandatory reporting, because there was a moratorium on all that kind of stuff. So a lot of this is still, you know, the devil is in the details. We'll come back and do this again, you know, in a few months when we have some firmer numbers. But looking at some projections from the Brewers Association, talking about the second half of 2020 and some optimism. Their overall respondents, and I will also qualify this, that there is sometimes respondent bias in these surveys. Like if you have good news, you respond. Or if you think something good, you respond. If you think you have bad news, or you do have bad news, maybe you tend to not respond. So it's all classic statistics stuff. But, overall, 4% belief in 4% growth across beer in 2020, and then actually craft beers, and then actually between microbrews, and brew pubs and tap rooms, estimating a growth of closer to 12%. Mm-hmm. And, I think, Matt, we were touching on this a little bit before, business models. So we're going to talk about this more in the podcast only segment, but people have adjusted their business model, and like you guys have, so it seems mm-hmm. to be working a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of breweries are faced with that, and it varies from state to state because everything's going to be different on how every state manages everything.
Like being able to deliver, do to go, yeah. sell mm-hmm. growlers states, and crowlers. And,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Some states were, you know, had people on their staff that were actually delivering the beer. You know, I'm pretty sure we can't do that here.
You can't do it in Louisiana.
But there's been other things that have kind of ramped up in Louisiana where it's been on online sales. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, buy everything, come and pick it up and take it. Mm-hmm. That's been a big thing. And you'll probably see that continue more and more. And it was a thing before this, but I think you're going to see it more, you know.
Let me ask you, and I don't want to mm-hmm. interrupt here because yeah. you bring up an interesting point, because for listeners outside Louisiana and even for listeners maybe inside Louisiana, this is one of the worst states as far as distribution goes and being able to sell mm-hmm. for yourself. And we've done shows before. I'll, you know, ask people to go reference a show that we did with David from Abita and mm-hmm. Carl from Gnarly Barley. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is a draconian state. So this is my own soapbox. Do you think things might actually change here? I mean, it's been kind of weird in Louisiana where, you know, the capital of Go Drinks was New Orleans, mm-hmm. and now you can't do that. But do you think this might actually change how the state?
I think it gives our case in the craft scene more of a voice, because mm-hmm. I think it kind of proves the inefficiency and the outdatedness of the three-tier system. And a lot of people have spoke to that, and I've seen a lot of it written during the COVID times about just how that system doesn't function for business as it should. It doesn't really help anyone, and especially it doesn't help the customer because they can't get what they want.
Mm-hmm. It helps the distributor.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe those things need to be taken a closer look at, because a lot more revenue can come in, a lot more tax dollars can come in, a lot more people can be involved, you know, and help start up more business. And that's all good. And I think this just gives us we need to take a closer look at it. And
I think where my question is to the, will this give some economic and hard data momentum mm-hmm. to say people will behave this way, given these business model changes?
You know, it really comes down to the dollar and the politician. And if they don't change, then nothing changes. Yeah, so we're kind of stuck.
Yeah, and who, you know, but then dollars break through barriers, right? What do you think, Sal?
I'm maybe not that cynical. I remember, you know, they say that necessity is the mother of all invention, right? And here we are with the necessity of COVID. And we can look at things from a countrywide perspective. I remember approximately a year and a half, 2 years ago, when they were arguing self-distribution in Louisiana, the Louisiana Craft Brewers Association was arguing self-distribution, and the distributing lobby would come out and say, oh, but exploding bottles and people are going to get poisoned and coming up with all this freaking malarkey, this this garbage. At least now you have hard data to say, hey, look, in every state is going to be different, but hey, in Illinois they did this and this is how it turned out, and in Alabama they did this, Louisiana we did this. So hopefully certain things will stick around. I think, as it was noted, as you've noted before, hey, I wish I would have thought, you know, we had to do it this way. Man, this worked out great. I wish we could have did it earlier, before all this. So,
I mean, it's one of the six or seven worst states. And I actually misspoke because I said Gnarly Barley, and that's Bayou Teche.
Yeah, Carlos. Yeah.
Carlos, thank you. Yeah. Carlos is still the president of the Craft Brewers Guild here in Louisiana, right? Or is he now, is his term done?
I think he still is.
I think he is.
He's a good guy. So yeah. Go check out that show. Yeah. That was from last year because we railed on distribution. And yeah, I'll be on the record there. So you guys, Matt, tell us briefly. We got about 3 minutes before we close out the radio portion of the show. We're drinking a very fine Belgian ale. So tell us about that, man.
The Belgian Golden. This is a style that we hadn't done before. I like to brew Belgian beer. It's really hard. It's probably one of the hardest styles, I think, to brew. Because they have a lot of tricks and they're not going to share them with anyone.
Those damn monks.
Right.
Who have been bought out by large beer. Right.
And nobody still knows how to do it. So this one, we haven't done the Golden. We've done the triple. We've done the blonde. We've done the double. This one, this has probably been my favorite out of them. It's more estery. It's more bubblegummy kind of apple pear kind of thing going on in there. Just a lot more fruit and a lot less of the phenolic. So you get less clove, less spice, less pepper.
Kind of thing. It's still there on the finish, though. It's still there. Critical to the beer, right?
It's going to be there, but it's not going to be as much as some of the other styles are.
So what's the alcohol in this?
8.2.
So because you mentioned like blonde, double, triple, the Brune. How would we describe this kind of, like, if we were to have to put it in a box?
The blonde can be low. The golden can range any, this can go up to like into the tens. The triple can also be kind of high too. Okay. The difference between the two is the golden's going to be drier. The triple is going to be sweeter. This one still is sweet because it's got the Belgian candy sugar in it, but the finish on it's really kind of clean and it kind of just dissipates. It's not like lingering too much. The flavors linger, but the sweetness isn't lingering.
Yeah, the baking spice kind of kicks in there at the end. Yeah. You guys got about a minute and a half left. Sal, quick thoughts on the beer, on this one, on the Belgian.
Great beer. Easy drinking, great phenolics on it. So you get that white pepper, that lovely just kind of estery, fruity. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is sneaky. The alcohol is sneaky. Mm-hmm. It'll it's one of those beers where you get that little bit of sweetness on the finish here, but after you have a couple of them, you're like, oh man, that was a lot stronger than what I thought it was.
Yeah, these aren't coming in the 16-ounce glasses.
These are, you know, no, it's served in the chalice for a reason. But yeah. It's one of those beers where you drink it, and it's almost a very quote unquote sessionable beer to a certain extent, minus that, you know, white pepper phenolics.
Until it's not.
Until you're like, shouldn't have did that.
You guys, we got about 45 seconds left. Beer judging certification program. So
beer judging certification program, BJCP, worldwide organization, been around since '85. Check them out, www.bjcp.org. Also on Facebook, beer judge certification program. If anybody is interested, also Louisiana BJCP. On Facebook group, if anybody's interested in becoming a certified beer judge, wants to take that leap, is interested in learning about beer styles or even how to brew or how to judge, you can find me on there, Sal Mortellaro II. Happy to get you on that path.
Awesome. Matt, real quick.
Yep. 639 Gerard Street, come across the causeway, head to the east. We're just about 2 miles off the causeway.
Old Rail Brew, yeah, you can easily find
Trailhead
out
on
the gram on the gram and Facebook and everything else. Yep. Mm-hmm. Matt and Sal friends are going to stick around for another shot with Nola Drinks. And if you are listening on the radio, go to our website, noladrinks.com, get the podcast, because that's where the action's at and that's where we're going to continue. But if you are listening on the radio, friends, now more than ever, please do take care of each other. Always remember to use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers.
Up. child, what are you doing in a place like this? I said I called your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your.
All right, everybody. Yep. Thanks for sticking around for another shot with Noah Drinks. Hope you are enjoying our chat with Matt and Sal. We're going to bounce back right over to Old Rail Brewing Company and continue talking about brews. Here we go.
All right, everybody, up another shot with Noah Drinks. Brian Diaz here. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. Happy to be back doing some new shows. Yeah. And, hey, we're chatting with Sal and Matt, our unpaid beer correspondents. As a matter of fact, well, Matt in particular is actually, like, you're now in the red, dude, because you're not only not paid, but you've been pouring beer out of the taps here at Old Rail while we're sitting here drinking. So it's like I'm the paid host, which I'm not really. But yeah, we're sipping on a cider that our friends from Savannah Bee Company sent to us recently. Ted Dennard, who is the owner of Savannah Bee Company, was kind enough, after we talked about honeybee conservation some weeks ago, sent me a little sampler pack of some really nice meads. And Sal, being certified in many things, as Sal is, he's a certified mead judge as well. So just when we're, because we just sipped on this, say what you just said.
So this is actually really lovely. It's very drinkable. It's very sessionable. This is a, in mead terminology, this is a hydromel or water honey, so it's a lower strength mead.
What does that mean? Like
basically, so this comes in at 6%. This is going to be 8% or below is considered a hydromel. Sparkling
is that a process thing, Sal?
So no, it's just, it describes a strength. There's hydromel standard and sack strength for the higher alcohols.
Okay.
So this is technically a hydromel sparkling because it is, you know, the carbonate, talking about this the carbonation, and then a cicer, which is essentially a apple based mead. So this is going to have
honey,
apple
and
juice.
Apple.
Okay. And I believe in this case, there is peach or apricot added
to it. I think both
it.
Peach and apricot, yeah.
Really lovely, drinkable, very quenching, very fulfilling. We chatted, it kind of reminds me of those, in flavor, it reminds me of those apricot
Charlie
rings.
The gummy bear peach ring things, yeah.
Just kind of sweet, tart. Really lovely. This is great. This is a pleasure.
This is real. It's really fun. Nice, like crushable porch kind of. Mm-hmm. Thanks to our friends at Savannah Bee Company for sending us.
Yeah, good job.
What do you think about it, Matt?
The first when I poured them, when I smelled it, I was kind of blown away by the aroma. Mm-hmm. It's kind of floral. It's nectarish. It's I don't know. Yeah. Very floral to me, but.
It's got that kind of blossom. That kind of
blossomy, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the flavor on it, it's fantastic. It's just delicious.
Really nice. 6% yeah. alcohol. Mm-hmm. Porch pounder here as we tail off in summer. Yeah, so hey, Ted. Shout out to Ted there at Savannah Bee Company. We got to say, we were talking about the beer industry, as we were. And we kind of touched on this, you guys, when we close out the radio portion of the show. The pivoting business model. And you guys, Matt, here at Old Rail Brewing Company, as a microbrew, 100% on premise, you guys had to do, I hate using these hackneyed terms, but you guys had to do a hard pivot.
Yeah. Yeah, so we had to, well, for one, we had reduced capacity, reduced bar capacity, reduced seating capacity, and then our event space upstairs went totally away. And so then the long been thing that on the wish list of mine was the crowler machine. And so when doing the curd side, we had the growlers. But to kind of look at a more efficient way to do that, in a faster way, was the crowler machine. And that's been a really nice, kind of perk to our ability to kind of get beer out quicker. Mm-hmm. And easier.
Work within Louisiana laws and get beer to people where they can come and buy here and take it to go.
Yeah. And what it always allowed people to do, especially at the 24-ounce size, which, you know, is 2 12-ounce pours, pretty simple, is to buy a bigger variety of beer. So if you're buying the growler, you know, you get 4 beers in there, but you only get 1 kind, and then you have to consume it within a certain amount of time. And this just allows our customers a little bit more options, flexibility, and I think that's a little bit nicer, especially if you're traveling far away.
So so just real quick, we're saying growler and crowler.
Right, yeah.
So growler is the 48-ounce bottle. And
glass
you have,
jug, yeah.
After you open it, you get 36 hours before it goes flat. Is that
after it's open, yeah, maybe even less.
Yeah, okay. And so this idea is that you can get a 24-ounce can that's it's not pressurized, right? So, I mean, it's pressurized to a point, but it's not going to keep, like, for 3 weeks. Like
it should keep relatively long. We've talked about this in the beer circles. They should last. You can last even, you know, up to a month if you do it right.
If
you purge it properly.
Okay.
And you get a good little bit of foam on beer, and you put that lid on it. The foam takes up the space that the oxygen takes up. But you should have the purge in. You're going to have the purge in there of CO2, so that keeps it fresh as well. And then when those bubbles dissipate, that should just leave pure CO2 in the void. And as long as your seamer's sealing good and you get a good seam on it and it can't, you know, lose pressure or anything like that, you should be good to store for a little bit.
So you guys have come into the situation where you're still making your beers and then people, you're open, I mean, because obviously things keep changing by the hour. Mm-hmm. It is limited 25, where are we at, 25% capacity?
I think we're up to 50%.
For dining, because you're a restaurant.
For dining,
as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we were talking about some of the negative sides of the impacts that we face in Louisiana. And I, you know, this week, actually, the governor, I think, is supposed to make an announcement on whether or not, the bars can open back up.
Yeah. In phase 3.
So we'll see what happens with that. And, you know, that also changes things. So moving forward down the line, you know, we'll see what happens.
Sure. And for listeners outside the area, that may not apply to New Orleans because New Orleans does its own thing. So we are talking about an adjustment to a business model. And Sal, in your opinion with craft beers, as we cruise into the last third or so of 2020, what are your thoughts here? I mean, we've thrown out a lot of doom and gloom numbers. I think we're going to see some ugly, right? I mean, I think we talked about, you know, 112 closures, which wasn't too different than last year. But, you know, we don't see those things washing out as people run out of money. What do you think we're going to see here in the last third or so of this year?
So, you know, I think we're going to see that upswing. One of the first things we talked about is those guys over there at Cypress Coast, man. It's the first brewery opening in Louisiana that I'm almost positive is the first opening in Louisiana post-COVID. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see that on the upswing. And, you know, craft beer brewers and folks, drinkers, the whole bit are a pretty tight-knit community. We all try to support each other. We all try to get out there and do what we can. You know, you're actually, you kind of stole my thunder wearing your hat. You know, eat local, shop local, drink local is very much
drink local.
Yes. drink local is very much a real thing with craft beer drinkers, not only in Louisiana, but nationwide, worldwide even. So I hope we see that trend.
Well, and then let's go there a little bit, because I think we were talking about with craft spirits and other things that we depend on these places. We depend on the Mats of the world who are making beers here, and obviously it's on premise and doing craft beer, but introducing us to a style, Sal, that maybe we don't particularly know so well. So then you go out and seek that out in the store. When we talk about craft spirits, we talk about going to our local craft bar where the bartender is saying, hey, here's a really cool drink. You order the drink and you go, cool, what's that spirit? And they give you a little quarter ounce pour of a taste. And you go, man, that spirit's awesome. I'm going to go drop $50 on that bottle in a store. How do we, and I mean, I know this is just throwing this way out there, but how do we need a broader base of ambassadorship, I think. in this to be able to throw things out and introduce things to people. So, like Facebook groups, right, and other things.
Sure, and there are Facebook groups out there. If you look, the South Louisiana Beer Connection is a good one. Church of the Sacred Brews on Facebook is a good one.
But what are some like national level ones?
And so probably the national one that I'm on would be Church of the Sacred Brews. They're started to spread over a little bit more all across the U.S. Still kind of south-based, but you can find them. They're out there, these Facebook groups that talk about beer and, hey, I'm drinking this or I'm drinking that all across the U.S. So they're out there. But, you know, it'll be nice to start to see beer festivals come back because that is a place where folks can go and try a whole bunch of different styles for a good price point, usually for a good cause that they would have never tried before and really open people's minds. So I really kind of hope to start to see those come back, but that's probably wishful thinking this early into all of this.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But these are, I think what we want as a takeaway message here is that we want people to understand the vectors of how we experience things. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, when you have your brew pub taken away from you, you have your craft cocktail bar taken away from you, you may not realize what that actually means for being introduced to product and new things. And I think we don't, I learned this in the wine industry a long time ago, generally you don't buy what you don't taste.
Sure.
And it's a lesson that we need to figure out ways to get things into people's mouths, I guess, or at least, you know, create trust and further trust to have people, you know, want to experience things and learn new ways to taste things and take that leap. And as you said, Sal, spend $20 on a 4-pack.
You know, if you got a friend who's a real beer nerd, talk to him. You know, see what they're drinking. You know, we all know that real niche nerdy guy, that be it wine, spirits, whatever the case may be. Find your local beer nerd friend and talk to him and get some recommendations. You know, trust those guys. And also, don't be afraid to explore. I mean, it's just beer when it comes down to it, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. 1 12-ouncer at a time, right?
That's right.
Matt, one more time, Old Rail Brewing Company, brother. Where do we find y'all here?
Yeah, so we're 639 Girard Street. We're at the St. Tammany Trailhead in Old Mandeville, about mile and a half from the causeway, to the east of the causeway.
Yep.
So if you're coming from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. An easy visit if you're coming to visit the area.
Yeah.
As we hopefully will do.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we're on social media, all that stuff. I think our hours should be updated by now.
I'm pretty sure. Monday, Tuesday closed. And
Monday, Tuesday closed, and we're open the rest of the week.
Yeah, and a good restaurant. Good food, by the way. Sal, BJCP, brother.
BJCP.org, actual website. You can find us on Facebook as well, Beer Judge Certification Program, Beer Judge Certification Program in Louisiana. There's another good group I haven't mentioned before, BJCP 101, for those who are interested in becoming a beer judge. It talks about the exam, the various exam process. Find me on Facebook. You can find me on any of those groups, Sal Mortellaro II. Happy to talk to you no matter where in the world you are about how to start off on getting you there to be a certified beer judge to the program.
And as we said, if you we're talking about find your nearest friend who's a beer nerd. If you don't have one, these are my two best beer nerd friends. And two of my best friends, but two of my best beer nerd friends. And yeah, go find them for recommendations because I learn stuff from them every time. Boys, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week. I do appreciate it. Happy to have you here as always. Hope you learned something from that conversation with Matt and Sal talking about beers. Yeah, a little bit of mead thrown in there for you. A lot of fun tasting. Thanks again to our friends at the Savannah Bee Company for throwing some meads our way. It was fun to taste through that one. Just a quick parting shot for you here today. As you know, a lot of local establishments are really hurting. Bars are really hurting. Restaurants are really hurting. Music venues are really hurting. And small beer producers, frankly, are really hurting as well, especially those that don't have large-scale distribution. And many of our favorite craft brews do not. They depend on keg sales for on-premise sales, meaning places where you can buy beer at the bar or in the restaurant, right? We know that those are hurting. It's a very tough scene for those that don't have the ability to sell retail. And even still, those that do have the ability to sell retail
may still be suffering, because lots of times right now what's going on, friends, during this COVID world here, lots of times when people go to the store, what they do is they buy what they know. They don't buy what they don't know. So if you haven't tried that craft beer, you may not know what it is, and you're just going to stick to Corona or something else. So what I'm urging you to do, please find out who your local breweries are. If they are selling in the grocery store or the liquor store, pick up a six-pack and support them. Give them a shot. If the brewery, if where you are, the brewery is allowed to sell to go right now, go to the brewery. A lot of them are actually able to can, and they don't last for a long time. They're not totally pressurized, but they can can. They'll keep for, you know, 2, 3, 4 days in the fridge. Pick up some cans, pick up some growlers, some crowlers, anything along those lines that you can do to support your local brewery. It keeps jobs in your area. It helps your tax base in your area, and it supports a local artisan or artisans, people that are trying to make a good beer in your backyard, and they need our help just as much as the bars, the restaurants, the music venues, and everybody else does. So remember, support local when you can. Do a little digging. You'll find there's more out there available than maybe you think. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.